We are back after a couple shows off. Joe brought the warm weather back to Youngstown, and we got to enjoy some 80-degree weather the last 2 days, courtesy of Momoi over there. And, yeah, it's good, good stuff. Vacation was good?
It was great.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
How, you know, if you follow Joe on Facebook, you'll know that he's trying some, he's experimenting with certain water and coffee and all of that. And he tried his best at salt water from the ocean in his coffee. Apparently, it was not good.
It was not good. And it was a little bit of a surprising thing. So one time, and this reminded me of this. So my mother-in-law baked pumpkin pies once, and she accidentally put salt in there instead of sugar. And I love pumpkin pie. And I took a big old mouthful of that. And it was salty as could be. That's sort of what it reminded me of. It was not good whatsoever.
It reminds me of the movie The Help, where the woman makes her a pie with some special turds in it. So, but no, it's good. I'm glad you had a good time, and you know, it's always good to get away with family. You posted something earlier on your Facebook that I just found super interesting. I read it all the way through, and a couple people were making comments like, "Huh, what?" And I know sometimes people read through your content and they got to read through it twice to kind of catch where you were going. But as soon as I read it, as I often do to you, I say, you know, oh, that reminds me of a scripture. And
I'm going to get you a t-shirt that reminds me of a scripture. Yes.
But, you know, you were talking about the speed of light, perception, thing being greater than the speed of light. Go into your post a little bit, and then I want to get into this idea of perception. And we'll go into maybe some philosophical stuff, but we'll have some fun with it.
All right, so we do these little thoughts experiments, me and my son, when we're driving, especially because one of my mentor, you know, Einstein, played with relativity. So thinking about like when you put something through the spectrum of a perspective that's not yours, he loved riding a train for going the speed of light and kind of looking at the world, what would happen if you were traveling at the speed of light? What about if two trains were both going at the speed of light? Then it would be relative to each other's speed and they wouldn't be moving at all. And so that kind of goes like, you know, we're spinning on a planet that's going 14,000 kilometers per second and a solar system that's going 250,000 kilometers per second, et cetera, and everything seems to be moving. So it's you never know what's relative to your movement at any given time. So that's sort of where we're going, like, you know, thinking that the light is the fastest thing, right?
Right.
And, you know, you kind of look at it from... like a dog, for instance. Dog can't see in color, so you have a conversation what red looks like to a dog, and the dog's like, what? You know, you wouldn't have anything to talk about. Same thing with, you know, creatures at the bottom of the ocean that, you know, have never met you, don't know you even exist, and trying to explain to a creature that has no perspective on it what a human being even is, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, a two-dimensional world trying to explain what a three-dimensional world is. I've seen the illustration with a marker. And if you show that to a two-dimensional world, and you show two different stick figures, this marker entering their world, they're going to have an argument about it because one is going to look at it and say, that's a circle. The other is going to look at it and say, it's a rectangle. Exactly. And they're both right.
Yep.
Because perception is really what you can see. And so one of the things you talked about and we've talked about before is there's just limiting factors in a physical world to what we can experience. Our eyes can only see so much. Our ears can only hear so much. There's certain things that we just have certain limitations in our physical body to what we can experience. And then we act so dogmatic about what we can see, taste, touch.
That we know it.
That we know
we're so sure of it. So certain. Sure of it.
And it's interesting to me, you know, being a person of faith, it takes me to a couple of spots. So there's a scripture in Colossians where it says that in him, all things hold together. And so when I think about all these things spinning really fast, like, you know, what's holding that in place? You know, when you put a marble on or the ball on the roulette wheel or whatever, like there's a bumper holding it all in place, and the physics of it, you know, allows it to work in a certain capacity, but unless it gets spun in the beginning, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
And so it's just an interesting concept. And then one of the things that I put on there, on your post was the passage where Jesus says, you know, people have ears, but are never hearing. They have eyes, but they're never seeing. And of course he was alluding to his parables and how people that were, raised in a certain, you know, concept and context of God should have recognized who he was, but they didn't. And that was what he was alluding to. But ultimately, you know, I think you could extrapolate that out as to, you know, how much in our physical bodies are we missing of a non-physical world,
right?
That
it's hard to even picture what that is. Cause I mean, you can't fault people who tried to assemble this. They were working right. with sure. the paint that they had on their palette, right? Yeah. They had to paint the whole world based on what they could see. Cause that's our primary sense. But what about the things beyond that? Then the great philosophers filled in the rest of the gaps, and they had, it was predicated on a visible or observable world.
Right. But I think the thing that's missing, and it's something I'm very comfortable with in a realm of faith, it's even missing in the realm of faith, is that being unknown or having doubt is okay. Like I'm completely comfortable saying to people in my church, I don't know. Not sure how that works.
I have more trust in you that you do say that, by the way. Yeah. I don't trust people that know.
At the end of the day, and I've said that from the pulpit, like, if I have all the answers, you're in a cult, you should run. Like, at some level, there should be somebody higher than me that I go, I don't know how he's going to do that.
Right.
You know, I have this book. I do my best. I feel like that's from God, and I do my best to navigate life through that lens. But at the end of the day, there's stuff here, and he's way above my understanding. Like, he made this whole thing and he's outside of that light and sound, and you know, you start getting into the science of it, and I think there's a whole perception of it. When I was in Bible college, I think it was Theo 1 or Theo 2, we got into the creation narrative, and you and I started talking a little bit about mm-hmm. Genesis. And one of the things that comes out in that creation narrative that's so interesting is the relationship that Adam and Eve have to the spiritual realm. So first of all, they get to name all the animals, and the animals get brought to Adam one by one. None of them try and eat them. Like, there's this kind of copacetic relationship with them. And then you have God, who, I don't know if Joe's ever seen God.
I've never seen God.
And in the same boat, I have not seen his physical form, but Adam could hear God walking through the garden in the cool of the day. There's just a different relationship. And one of the things that we talk about is when they're kicked out of the garden, you know, one of the things my professor said is not only did they lose like a relationship with God that we often talk about, but he goes, I think they lost dimensions. And he goes gets into a little trippy physics stuff and some other stuff. But you think of the things that happen when Jesus is resurrected, right? We just came out of Easter. So there's a whole accounts of what Jesus did after he was resurrected. He was in one city, and then he just appears in the room with them. Did he teleport? Is he able to do that? Is right. he outside of time and space?
Well,
and then right. he'll eat fish. He'll interact with a physical item. He'll eat fish, and then all of a sudden walk through a wall seemingly, and the fish didn't get left outside. It went with him. And so there's all kinds of things that we don't grip and understand fully. And so I really think that there's more, yes, we could have the spiritual discussion of the relationship with God that's damaged in that, but I think there's so much more to be restored, and it's dimensional. Yeah. God designed heaven and earth to be together. And I think that's the part that we're missing. It's almost like a real thin membrane, and we can't quite see it. We know there's kind of spiritual and supernatural things. Most people would say they're spiritual, but we can't quite put words to it because it's a dimension.
Well, let me do some definitions here, because we throw these terms around like dimensional, and I think a lot of people, including our listeners and even me at one point in my life, didn't really know what a dimension even was.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about what a dimension is, and let's start at like the smallest. Like, we always started with the singularity,
yeah.
right? The point. And in order, and this was, when you study this stuff, you see these themes that repeat itself in nature and in physics, and all, it all kind of like follows the same guidance. Mm-hmm. So you have two singularities, and you have a line, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have a couple lines, and you have a square, and then you have a couple of squares, and you have a cube. And then you have a couple of cubes, and then you start getting into what, like, dimensions that don't quite compute. Because we right. know what three-dimensional space is. We can walk around it, right?
Correct.
But when you start taking space and time and making them the ability to swap, like, you let me travel some time and then travel some space,
yeah.
and then reverse that where you use space to travel some time,
yeah.
right? Then it gets a little wonky in your uh-huh. head.
Well, and you have all kinds of, and this is what I find so fascinating about the Bible when you put it through a scientific lens. I don't think the Bible is a scientific book. However, when you read through certain things, like there's a miracle where Joshua goes out to battle and God causes the sun to stand still, which is as we know, a physics anomaly. It does not happen.
In linear time, it does not.
So what happened in that miracle? Did God slow the earth? Did God stop everything? Did God, we don't know, right. But at some level, there's a dimension and access that we don't understand. And what I loved about your post is, like, we assume based off the information we have that we have all the information. And what you're saying is there's probably a lot more information out there that we don't have and perceptions we're not seeing. And I just wish more people would approach topics like that and be more open. Cause I think you'd discover a world that you didn't ever fathom could exist.
Yeah. And that's, you know, like the artists, they predict a constant in our experience. But no matter what you look at, there's change and there's movement and mm-hmm. there's entropy, right? So there's no such thing as a constant. So you can draw the picture today and the picture's completely gone tomorrow as you stretch through these dimensions and space and time.
Well, and not only that, but revelation is progressive. So the way cavemen understood fire and time and food and all of this stuff is very different than how we understand some of that stuff. There's been technological advances. There's been things that we understand about the anatomy. And as we've been able to go, I think with greater knowledge comes greater responsibility. And I think I heard a rabbi say this, that it takes a lot of faith in this generation to be an atheist. Simply because we have the ability to go into some of the smallest particles and to go into some of the deepest spaces on Earth and deepest places in the ocean and deepest places in space. And we can go to some of the largest stuff and we still can't get to the end of them and we still can't find them out. And there's still seemingly infinite amounts to know, which continues to beg the question that there has to be something else or has to be something bigger.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to go here, but I'm going to go here and make it a little more personal. I know for you, you kind of did an end around in your faith journey through the science, life experience, business, universal laws kind of drew you into a place where you're like, all right, God's kind of here and this one makes sense. How did you come to that? What was like, did you have a moment where you were like, or was it just a gradual thing?
No, I create these machines. And then once I have a machine that I trust, I try to see what kind of stuff I can put through it. And so sort of like logical consequences, philosophical consequences. And I'm like, okay, well, this is the output that I got when I put this thing through here. Let's see if this thing works, right?
Yeah.
And so like I can compare the results based on the last thing that I put through there. I know that that's kind of like abstract in its thinking, but I don't have like an end to it. Like, I don't know where it's going to go. I just want to see what happens. I'm like experimenting in that way. And I think it creates like, there's no such thing as a bias when you put it through, because you don't care what happens. Like, because there's nobody in it with me. Nobody's going to critique it. Nobody's going to add a but ifs or whatever. It's just me and seeing what flames I can make.
And so, as you came into that space, do you remember, was there a moment, was there a light bulb moment where you went, you know what? I think I'm going to go this direction.
I have this bullshit meter, right? Yeah. And when it goes off, that's the stuff that I put through the thing. Okay. Something that doesn't make sense, that somebody says is a certainty, and I don't get it, and it doesn't make sense. Oh. Those are the things that I put through there. Like, that's why me and Genesis don't get along so much, because that was one of the first books that said, wait a minute, I know what time is, and that's not right.
Yeah. We have our movie date that we got to
do
here.
Yes, for sure.
And watch that movie as Genesis history.
And I'm not out, like, to, you know, dispel anything. It's not my intention. It's to have an understanding of it.
Absolutely.
And sometimes when you get to the bottom, you're like, yep, it's not supposed to understand it.
Well, and I think it's interesting because the further you go in archaeology, every time I go back to Israel, there's a new discovery and they're like, well, you know, we thought this was just a story, but then we found Ur of the Chaldees, or we found this space, you know, we found Abraham's this or whatever. And they're finding this stuff that everybody said, oh, that probably didn't happen that way. And then sure enough, they're finding the cities or finding the artifacts that are confirming the historical account. And the more of the historical account gets confirmed, the more confidence you can have in the validity of the text. And then it starts to beg the question of, you know, the miraculous stuff. And that's where, you know, you have people like Thomas Jefferson and others that were like, maybe there's this God out there, the kind of deist in that sense, but we're going to cut all the miracles out because I can't do the supernatural thing. It just doesn't happen. And you have others that kind of, well, I'll do the God thing, but he's kind of far off. He really doesn't care about you. And then kind of eliminate that stuff. How do you handle the supernatural? Because obviously Genesis, is a historical account. You can have, a whole series of interpretations and questions and all of that. And I love digging into that. But the supernatural stuff, you can kind of look around and see some stuff that's pretty wild. There's stuff that happens in modern medicine today that 100 years ago they would have called a miracle.
Yeah. Right.
And so when you look at that, you know, we could take miracles in one of two ways. But, you know, when you start looking at supernatural stuff, how does that go through Joe's BS meter, as you call it?
Yeah, and I have to discount what I think I know about things. And most of that comes from, like, you will say it, and I think it sounds pretty logical, so I'll just kind of adopt it as my own mm-hmm. instead of, like, you know, me putting it through my own ringer. So I got to know whether or not I concluded that and if I mm-hmm. had good basis for it and whatnot. So I'm not, you know, when you read some of the early physics things and these people, you know, they're heretics when they started delving into this possibility. That was all supernatural when they were talking about,
right.
And you know, we're talking about time travel and string theory here. I mean, we're right on the same crazy boat as they are. So, I mean, it's, you know, I kind of look at it like what's logical, you know, things that were written over 1,000 years, if we go to 1,000 years into the future and then come back today and try to figure out what was happening here by looking at today's works, hopefully you don't open the scroll of Cardi B because you're going to get a terrible, what were these people all about? Oh,
yikes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got to go through that as well. I mean, there were some writings that were probably through the same spectrum. Mm-hmm. There were some politics that were probably through the spectrum, but there's some truth in there. And it's being able to dispel and say what is pretty believable, the stuff that's outlandish that might even still be possible. And it's a lot of fun to go back through it that way.
You know, and I think it's interesting because there are a lot of people, especially on the conservative religious evangelical side of things, it would say, you know, you just got to accept it bar none. And I actually don't think that's biblical. I think some of the best worship that people do is when they dig in to the Word of God or dig in to a truth about God, his planet, whatever. And we're going to dig all the way through and we're going to run it through the toughest scrutiny. And I think he enjoys that interaction. I know for me, it not only does it give me a greater sense of faith on the other end of it, because I say this to people all the time, like God's shoulders are broad enough to handle whatever question you have. Like he's not up there like, oh my gosh, I wonder if they're going to figure this out. Like he's not concerned in that regard. And so I think we should ask the hard questions. I think we should push the limits of certain
And you know
things.
What I think is beautiful? That if you take 100 people and you have that conversation mm-hmm. with God, each one's going to give a different answer for a completely different reason. Yeah. Like you're on the trail you're supposed to be. I'm not going to compare notes with you because you're on a completely different path.
Yeah. Yeah, we got into this a little bit yesterday at the California Palms, I guess it had come up in a previous group, and some of the guys, a bunch of them had come to Easter, and they had asked, one gentleman was really having trouble, because in the 12-step programs, they talk about higher power, and some people obviously define that very distinctive, you know, and other people leave it kind of ethereal, and he didn't even want to call his higher power God. He was like, he really struggled with that kind of side of it. Simply because he had such bad definition connotation of God. And then we got into backgrounds like, you know, why would a all-knowing, all-loving God allow me to go through X, Y, and Z? And some couple shared their personal stories. And it was a great exchange. But it all comes back to the first thing that we talked about is that perspective. Like we're all seeing this through our lens. Everybody's coming to faith, life, physics, science through their lens, and you only have the information that you can receive through your eyes or through your ears. Now, here's where my question's going to go. Is there a way to expand your perspective?
For sure.
How do you do that?
For sure. So I invent these like crazy look at through the eyes of someone who's not me. And it gives me my best insight because I've got bias and I've got wants and whatever. I have an end in mind. If I take it to that third party perspective, I can expand mine by sometimes I adopt that third party only because it's more right than what I came up with.
Yeah, counselors are always good. Reminds me of a scripture, Joe. The Bible says there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors. And it's true, you know, going and getting another perspective from another person. You know, I remember being in college and I would call my mom and say, hey, what do you think I should do? I can make this decision, or this decision. And, you know, she was really good. She would, you know, I kind of think, you know, you should ask this question. She would never tell me exactly which one to pick. And as we got further along, I realized that my mom always knew knew the right thing to do. And so after a while, I'm not stupid. I'd be like, Mom, which one? Just pick. And I'm going to do whichever one you tell me to do, because I'm tired of learning on the back end that you were going to pick this one and I picked this one and you watched me pick it. You know, explain to me why you're picking that. I don't want to have the pain of picking the wrong thing. But that, those mentors, coaches, those sort of things are a great way to shift perspective. I think from a spiritual standpoint for people, you know, not just the mentors, coaches, and getting outside yourself, but sometimes it's really hard to lay down our very subjective world. You know, we were raised one way. I know for me, the connections I've made in the Jewish world with some rabbis and with some friends now, and it's opened up. I have said to them, like, it's made my faith deeper and richer, even though we're looking at similar texts and there are a lot of similarities. They just help me see things from a different perspective that I don't have. I wasn't raised Jewish. I wasn't raised in certain traditions. And so in some ways they make the Bible more impactful for me, because they carried it for the last 5,000 years, you know, the Old Testament at least. And so when I get into those discussions, it gives me another perspective. For some people that struggle, particularly, I mean, God's such a big idea, but even just a general perspective in their lives, people's a great way. How about experiences? I think experiences help us get outside of our shell and going to another place, another, you know, you have somebody in a rural town in Ohio for their whole life. They grow up, they buy a house a mile down the road from their parents. You take and drop them in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I promise you, perspective is going to change, because they think one way. You know, I grew up on the East Coast. I thought one way about Midwest. And then I came to the Midwest. Right. Some of those things were confirmed, but a lot were dispelled very quickly as I met people. And I went, wow, this is different than I thought it would be.
I consider you probably one of the most normal people that I know. And I always look...
I'll take that.
And I always look down on normal people. I really did. And that's not anything. That's not an insult to you.
No,
I'm saying that, you know, when you try to, you know, break away from the pack, there's a lot of frictions and a lot of criticisms that come along with that. And it kind of draws you into that normal thinking. So taking on a perspective is a risky endeavor, because it makes you abnormal. I kind of look for the souls that are kind of like spinning with no clear rotation, because I know that they're more able to pull in different perspectives. That's people good. That are like in the middle of the pack, you have to break them out of that. Yeah. You have to give the good reason. Like, I don't understand. You're kind of an anomaly where you have genuine interest in the abnormal way of thinking. And I know you could probably create a lot of your own frictions by being interested in it as you are.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I definitely, there's nothing like a book that I completely disagree with the author on, or a conversation with somebody on the opposite side of the spectrum, politically, religiously, whatever. Because for me, I know that this is a firm belief that I have. All truth is God's truth. And so at the end of the day, I could be sitting across from somebody that totally doesn't believe in God. But there, for me, I'm approaching that conversation, not discounting everything that's coming out of their mouth, but there's a shred of truth here. And I'm in this conversation for a reason. If I believe that God aligns those things. And so there's something I'm supposed to learn. And when I approach things like that, it lets me be more malleable to certain things. One of the compliments I get from a lot of my mentors is how teachable I am. And I really try and keep my heart soft, so that I'm not going into the conversation. I don't ever want to be in the room and be the expert. Yep. I always want to be somewhere in the middle,
because I want to learn and I want to be able to help. That's how I know you're kind of like, there's sort of like some divine pushing on you, because you're a normal guy who's delving in places that make him uncomfortable and everybody else uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. So I know that you would not naturally end up there. So that experience, you're being pushed way into places that you were probably, you were born to be there, but you weren't like maybe designed naturally with for.
Yeah, no, I've been much more comfortable selling insurance.
Now let me talk to you about this, because this honestly, there was a paper that was published about string theory.
Okay.
All right. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I know the word string theory and I've heard them together, but that is probably the extent of what I know about string theory.
Okay. So there are, and this is in your realm, so this is why I'm bringing it up to you, because you are my relationships guru, right? You are relationships man.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about relationships on people that are fully built having relationships, but there's also relationships between particles and atoms and things in the natural world. There are associations that make these two things paired. Now, the anomaly is that you can take some of these particles that have a connection with one another and separate them by the vastness of space, and they have instant communication. Yeah. They basically can possess information that defies the speed of light. Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, the stretching of space and time yeah. starts to play. If there's relationships between particles, we are particles, right? Yeah, we are the things that have the ability to connect with things regardless of time and space, right? Yeah. So dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Your court.
So it's very fascinating, you know, when you get into some of that stuff. I don't know if this is necessarily string theory, but like if you, I think it's a quark. If you cut a quark in half, and you split it, and you take half of that quark and put it in New York, and half of it and put it in Los Angeles, and you spin the one in New York, the other one in Los Angeles will begin to spin in the same direction as the one you spin in New York.
Which that is totally relationship. Wild. Absolutely.
Totally relational, and that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
I think for... So when I look at people, I believe that we're a body, a soul, and a spirit, and we could get into that a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, I think there's things about me that transcend my physical side of things. And then there are things about me that are obviously very, very physical. You know, some people are, you know, look like they got baptized in lemon juice. You know, they just have certain physical demeanors. Now, is that an expression of their soul, or is that just a way their body is made? You know, like some of those things are in relationship with one another and affect one another. Some of those things are by design. But I think that the three of those things can work together. Most people are at war with themselves. And so, most of the battle, I think the conflict for people is in their soul. And that's, for me, that's the seat of your mind, will, and emotions, and how you choose, to position your soul, what things you surrender to, what philosophies you ascribe to, you know, how you approach life, positive, optimistic, all that sort of stuff. Your soul then determines a lot of things about your body and your spirit. When those three things are in alignment, those people take off. Some people get their spirit in alignment, but never get their body in alignment. I've been working on my body for a while. Started back at the gym. I'm very sore. Sunday.
Congratulations.
Yeah, Sunday. I don't know if you met Johnny. Johnny's one of the trainers at Planet Fitness. And he came up to me. He's like, so when you come back to the gym? And I was like, and he's like, you know, you don't have to wait for Jed to come back to the gym. You can work out with me anytime. I was like, I do know that. And so I was like, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Nice. And so we went Monday, Wednesday, I'm going tomorrow morning. But in that sense, I know that like, when I look at things, like I feel like my spirit, my soul are good, but I'm at war with my body right now. And so most people are fighting a battle on one of two planes. Their soul's either not submitted in the right direction and their spirit's all out of whack, or their body's out of whack, and that puts their soul out of whack. And we could have a whole conversation about
that. And I think that you have some natural things that are connected, and I think you have the ability to put frequencies in line. Like you and I, we align our frequencies, and we couldn't be more opposite in most ways. But I know that somehow we're able to like still communicate on those and relate on those ways. And it's, again, it's an anomaly. We're not something that you and I would meet on the streets, and you know, maybe we would get along. I don't know.
I think you're pretty cool, Joe.
Aw, yeah. See?
It's that relational thing, right? No, it's, you know, and it's always fascinating to me, you know, you'd use the expression of oil and water, right? Some people, personalities, everything, you put them in a room and you're like, wow, they're going to kill each other. They have nothing in common. And then some of those people get married. And they are married for the next 50 years. And you're like, well, that worked. And then other people are so similar that they hate each other.
Yep.
And so there's such a weird tension. And so sometimes, and that's why marriage counseling and counseling in general is great, because it brings another perspective into the room. For you on the relational end of things, I know you're working in that space. Do you tend to navigate towards people that are like you or not like you?
Total opposite. I go after the, you know, the hardest, or the, you know, my one of the first days I have a new employee speech that I go through. And one of the things is that you walk into the bar and you punch the loudest guy in the face. That's all. Just my philosophy is get that out of the way, and everything else is kind of easy.
Uphill from there.
I'll go to the playground and I'll pick the kid that's going to, you know, beat my ass. And I'm going to take care of that one first. I'm not saying fight him. I might be doing, you know, some diplomatic things. You never know.
Look, here's $50. Leave me alone.
Yes. But then it's kind of downhill from there. Yeah. But I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think, it's interesting because, introverts and extroverts, right? They each have a natural rhythm or spin to their relational world. And it's not always amounts. Sometimes it's probably more what's important to them. And so like my wife tends to be more on the introverted side of things. And so she doesn't need a party. I would go to a party every night of the week. She doesn't need a whole lot of people. That Easter Sunday, I did my best to end service and go and stand at the back because we had a ton of guests and I just wanted to greet people. It was a very traditional pastoral thing to do, but I wanted to be available so that if new people wanted to introduce themselves or people wanted to bring their family, I could meet grandma and so on. And so I did that very strategically, and my wife popped up next to me, which is work for her, right? For me, I'm like in my spot, like, and I'm going to remember every single name of the people that go by. Oh, see you later, Phil. See you, Joe. See you, this person. And, you know, for my wife, she's met some of these people before, has no idea who they are, and they're coming up, and she's like, I know, wants to grow in this area, very similar to you. And so I guess my question is, it's not necessarily going against your nature, introvert or extrovert, but it's about putting yourself in a position to grow in that sphere. And sometimes that's going to put you, all growth comes from being uncomfortable. And so you shift your perspective. My wife shifted her perspective. Normally she'd go round up the kids, get in the van and go home. But she didn't. She came back and she positioned herself there, and she was genuinely, I'm exhausted when she got home from that. I was super energized. The more people in the room, the more energy I have. But you know, for her, it was like, whew, that was a workout. But I think all growth comes from that spot, from a place of uncomfortableness when we position ourselves outside of what is not necessarily our wheelhouse, when we put ourselves in a place where, man, this is uncomfortable. I'm not going to like this, but I know it's for my best. And so in a relational sense, how are you doing that to stretch Joe relationally?
Let me give you a couple stories.
Yeah.
Because they were not great. This is not, This did not go well. So to just latch on to yours, you know, if I see that church is going to let out, like I already know what door I'm going out, so that it gives me the least potential.
Your car's already started, yeah, exactly. And on its way to pick you up, yes, at the door.
So I was at a campground, and it's easier at a campground because if you mess something up, you never have to see anybody again. You kind of practice through your things. So this guy was camped across the way from me, and he had a Jeep, and I was like, yes, because I don't do small talk, but I'm like, I've got a Jeep and you've got a Jeep. I can go over there and say some things and see how
you
this
gotta
goes.
You got to get yourself some rubber ducks that you can leave on other people's Jeep. You get jeeped.
Nice.
Jen Gleghorn does it all the time. She's got like a bag of these, and she writes a little note on them and leaves them on people's Jeeps. I guess it's a Jeep thing. You need to get some.
Okay.
You'll meet people.
All right.
They won't think you're weird.
Okay. So I'm sitting back, and I'm like, you know, I'm getting up the courage. I'm going to go over and talk about his orange Jeep because it was cool and it was orange, whatever. And somebody else was walking down the street, and they started talking about his Jeep, right? And I'm sitting down by the campfire, and like 20 minutes has gone by. I'm like, holy shit, I'm so lucky I didn't talk. You would have talked to me for 30 minutes. I was so relieved that I didn't
get this vacation. That was about to be exhausting.
Because I learned that about myself. Yeah. I'm not really scared about talking with you. Yeah. I'm scared about like running out of things to say or getting super awkward or like having to like reminisce in the awkwardness. So yeah, that's me. I'm so broken.
No. I it's so fascinating. So my wife hates that too. That same sort of thing. And I think, for me, I see it as a tennis match. And so, you know, the idea behind tennis is I just always want to put the ball back in your court. And so for me, when I get into those spots, you know, especially like I've been working with the teenagers at church, and sometimes it's like, how was your guys' day? Good. How was this? Good. I just have to be a better question asker. Like when I ask a question, that's just a one word answer. But when I ask a question that's going to lead them into a longer answer, it's going to force them to say a full sentence. They may still say good, we did this or whatever. But that helps break the awkward ice, because some of them are very introverted. But for you with your camping stuff, it's just tennis. You know, just think, I would go in with 10 questions, you know, and just lob them back.
All right. So I walk out here, right? And the guys that do the parking here, security, I'm like, hey, this weather's awesome. I'm like, Joe, that's so stupid. That is so cliche. Think of something original. I beat myself up because it's too simple. Like, so what would you say? You say, Joe, you want to come up with something that doesn't make you feel like you're just like massaging on a given, right? What do I say when I go out?
But some things are just designed to break the ice. Like they say hi to me almost every time I pull in, and like, hey, how are you? I'm doing well. How are you? And then they'll say usually nice weather, or I'll say nice weather.
Yeah, you took my line.
And or if it's raining, like, oh, this weather sucks.
I know, I gotta be better. I gotta think of better stuff.
But those things, so it's not that question that matters. It's what follows. So, you know, anytime I see somebody in church, oh, how you doing? How's the family? It's usually my question. Oh, we're doing well. You know, so-and-so's got soccer right now, or football or whatever, and we're handling this. Oh, that's great. And then from there, what's the purpose of the conversation? Well, I've been meaning to ask you, even in, you know, text messages and stuff like that. A lot of introverts are very like, here's what I need. And I'm not here for the small talk. I'm here for that. And, but most people, you know, you got to buy them dinner, Joe, before you can take them home. Like there's those things. So asking about the weather is just, hey, I'm buying you dinner. Now there's the reason for the conversation. And so your reason for the conversation with the security guys is?
Be polite. That's what it is.
So every person I meet, for me, and Bishop Thomas taught me this, every person I meet has a 10 on their forehead. They're a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. And so I want to add value to them, whether it's the security guy and ask him what book he's reading, right? They're usually out there reading a book, or he's sitting there, oh, you playing a game on your phone? What game are you playing? Oh, my wife plays that game. And then talk about Candy Crush. Now, my brain is weird. I will file away and remember what book he read and what game he plays. And the next time he goes out there, oh, did you beat your high score? Da, da, da. And each step I'm building rapport. And then when he has it'll be 6 months from now, he says, hey, you know, what are you here for the podcast for, whatever. And now that we've gotten built that relationship, the next thing he's going to ask is, hey, I got something going on. You're a pastor, right? And the next thing, now I have this window in his life and an opportunity to really add some value.
You know what? So this morning, he said that he was going fishing. And then I said, where are you going? And he said he was going to a lake, but I don't remember. Let me think, where did he go? If I remember this, and I could say, how was Pima tuning?
There you go.
So tomorrow when he comes in, how was Pima tuning? And there then the go. Circuit is connected.
That's the whole thing. It's almost like seeing everything as one continuous conversation. So you know, when you're doing that, though, the for me, the goal is I want to add some sort of value to their life. And so sometimes just by remembering small things, like, you know, we had somebody at church, their daughter broke her ankle at the trampoline park. And I had a couple of questions to ask, and I shot them a text, and I was like, you know what, how's your daughter doing? Oh, and I got, you know, back. And then I was like, oh, by the way, I'm meaning to ask you, you know, I don't want, like, if everything is transactional, that's where you start to get in and you start feeling icky. Cause you're, you know, your Manchu scale, and we've talked about some of that. But if I'm genuinely invested in somebody's life and I'm asking those questions all along, cause I genuinely care. And then something comes up where I can really add value. It's super special. You know, I had the opportunity, you know, unfortunately, to do a young man's funeral who overdosed. I met him one time, came to our church. I prayed with him at the altar. 4 days later, week later, overdosed in his room. His parents were here on Easter. Now, I didn't know him. They asked me to do the funeral. I will do my best to honor his memory in whatever way that I can. And got to, you know, minister to the family. I said hi, prayed with them. But it was very minimal interaction, but I just wanted to be there in that moment, hold their hands, cry, whatever they needed in that moment. I was going to serve them to the best of my ability. Now, I didn't do that so that they came to church. I did that because he was valuable. They are valuable. Now, in turn, when I do that, now they've come to church a bunch of times and they may find a spiritual community that's going to come around them and help them walk through the rest of this grieving process. But I didn't like, wasn't like, well, you know, do this funeral so that those people come to church. That's like gross.
Right.
You know, but that permeates everything else that, you know, I'm not just doing this so that you buy a car from me. I'm doing this cause I care. There's a different element to that. And we all know when we got the used car salesman to use analogy. For sure. And the same way, you know, Youngstown Computers, you know, I'm not fixing your computer, because I want you to continue to do business with me or because I want you to give me a good review on Facebook. Like I want to add value to your life. Right. And you go, you know what, I really appreciated this. Like, this was really great. This was a fun experience. I would tell all my friends to go here.
As a byproduct of the natural.
And the emphasis is just on the wrong syllable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you've seen me on this pursuit with relationships for a while. And you know, I'm not giving up. It's like a dog on the bone of it. And I do feel like I'm very, you know, primitive in my experiences on it. And there's a lot of selfishness that goes into it. Sure. There's a lot of Joe-centric where, you know, I can go through my day of having 100 important things that I just made a decision on, and having a conversation about where you went fishing, it goes way down on the scale. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's important enough to have. So it does necessarily, I got to like change volumes and I got to have different priorities on different things, but I got to learn the difference and know why I'm doing it. I mean, it's a really weird brain that's gotten me to this point in my life.
Well, and I think, you know, in a business sense, in a life sense, the other side of it is, yes, I want to add value to people. You know, I want to see everybody achieve their potential. But at the end of the day, I don't know 10 years down the road, 15 years, I don't know when it's going to, that you reap what you sow. I don't know when that's going to boomerang back, and I'm going to be the one in need of the encouragement, in need of that stuff. And it may not be that person, maybe somebody else, but you know, you're sowing seeds into Joe's future as well. I know that sounds kind of selfish, but you're not just building those relationships for you, but as you send that currency out, right, eventually you get a return on investment, and people are the best ROI there is.
Yeah, and I just feel like, because it's not an authentic thing right now, that I don't deserve the fruits of being good at this yet until I'm actually good at it. In fact, I don't want it. I don't want the accolades until I'm actually going out there and I forged a relationship and I didn't try to screw it up 15 different ways.
What would you tell me about money?
What? Oh, shit. You just did that to me. Damn it.
I did. you would tell me the same thing, right? It starts in here, that you have to believe you deserve it. It starts with mentality, and it starts with what comes out of your mouth. And then from there, the relationship stuff will shift. I just flipped the script.
You saw that happen, didn't you?
I did. I saw it. I was like, wow, he's putting this on a tee for me. He's going to love this. but ultimately, you know, it all comes back to that perspective. If I want to get better at relationships, I need a perspective of somebody who's good at that. If I want to get better at money, I got to get around somebody who's good at that. If I want to, you know, handle, you know, my business better, I got to get around somebody who's handling theirs right. I need a shift in perspective. So whether we're talking spiritual, business, whatever, that perspective, it really, really matters.
But there is evidence that I'm pursuing this. Like, you see it, right? Yeah. That you see me chasing this down.
Absolutely.
Stumbling around, looking like a goofball.
You before vacation.
Yeah.
You came to the church with a cable that we desperately needed.
Yes.
And Joe did not just come in and drop cable off. You could have.
I did.
And probably in time past, you stood in that parking lot for 20 minutes.
Yes.
And everything in you wanted
but
to get
you
in
know
the
what?
Car
Here's the thing. Like, I discounted that later because you guys were all friendlies. Now, if you put a couple of people that I didn't necessarily like or didn't know, I would have been like, see ya. Right? Now that's the real challenge. I need to get in front of a bunch of people that maybe make me feel a little weird and stay in it for that same 20 minutes. And I'll say I made some progress.
Yeah. But doing it with friendlies is how you practice.
It's true. It's true. You know, and you guys were okay with it, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. We had fun. We laughed. It's good.
See, the world gets to see me develop in a way, like in real time. Like, and there's, Dev says, you always describe yourself as like terrible. Like, you're an awful person when you come across there. It's just a way of, I feel like if I'm bad at relationships, you can see you're being bad at financials and like connect the two together and know that we can both be bad, but be on the pursuit of not being bad anymore.
Well, and here's the thing. And you would say this probably about me as well. You're not as bad as you think.
Tough critic on yourself.
You
are.
You always are. And you're probably one step away from where you want to be. And when that, it's going to seem like a light bulb moment, and it might happen 2 years from now or whatever, but it's shifting that perspective for yourself and stepping into something new, and it's doing it over and over and over and doing it consistently, just like you would do with finances or anything else.
One dude who, when I heard this, I argued with it, but now I'm starting to see that maybe it's got some stuff, is that, you know, when you overlook a goal and you get so much invested in it, that it becomes sort of like an obsessive thing and it becomes part of your identity. That dude said, you know, start now thinking about the goal that comes after that one, and it'll take some of the priority off of it, and then it'll kind of minimize it a little bit. And by the time that you started putting emphasis on the next one, this one kind of dissolves and just goes away on its own. So it kind of says what you just said there.
Absolutely. And you know, we all have our areas that we're good at, and we all have our areas that we're deficient at. And the only difference sometimes is one or two decisions. in those areas. True. You know, one or two decisions in my health is going to unlock something. And then finally I'm going to go, I got it.
Right.
Took me 20 years and go to the gym and trying different diets. But I know one of these times it's going to click and it's going to stick and I'm going to have a whole different future because of it. And so what we can't do, the person who gives up, that's just, we just can't give up. We just got to go back to the plate and take another swing. I think that this whole conversation on perspective, whether we're talking spiritual or any of that stuff, getting a different perspective, changing your view on things really does matter for people. And so
I really just curveballed, side lane, pushed us all over in every direction on this conversation.
That was good. So. We were good. We were all about perspective today. You know, we did some string theory. We did some spiritual stuff. We talked relationships.
Time travel and time physics. Travel.
It's all about perspective, Joe. Yes. And we were right where we needed to be today.
All right.
We'll see you guys on Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.